With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, Eden.
Hi, Ione.
And hello to the listeners. Welcome to the Polyester Podcast. I'm Ione, and I'm the founding editor-in-chief of Polyester Zine and the author of Poor Little City Girls, which would make an excellent Christmas gift, I reckon. Just plug, plug, plug.
I think it really was. And I'm Eden, I'm the managing editor of Polyester and the co-host of this podcast.
This is The Sleepover Club, a feminist pop culture podcast where you pull apart the hashtag discourse in the hope of making some sense of it all.
Before we get started, please like, rate, review, and subscribe. And I know we've got a lot of reviews because people have been leaving loads, which is very nice.
And we are very, very, very grateful. I love this one. So it's just like one of the emo love hearts, 5 stars. I vote that fans of this podcast be officially dubbed Polly Pockets. That is by Skeleton Sneeze in the US of A. I absolutely agree. So you're all Polly Pockets now. So if you Polly Pockets would like to write in, I will gratefully receive your fan mail.
Yeah. I used to love chewing on Polly Pocket clothes.
Yeah, you did. I don't know if I did. I loved my Polly Pockets, so I was so obsessed. And I love you all now.
Hey.
So today we are talking about a few things. This started because me and Eden spent some time together in person this week, which is not that common because we live in different places. Eden lives in Manchester, I live in London. But then when we were hanging out together, what happened? So basically we're talking about like how Hollywood is changing, how celebrity culture is changing, and kind of like in a way looking back on the year, because it's been like quite a year of celebs and mm-hmm. what we think is going to happen in the future, and how kind of all the stuff we always talk about is feeding in to this big shift in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we started to see the cracks this year as well with like all the Don't Worry Darling drama and stuff, mm-hmm, which I think that's why everyone buzzed off that so much, because it was finally like something interesting's going on. Like they're not doing this PR fucking trained, media trained, soundbite ready press tour. It was like a fucking, it was a mess.
And I also saw that like apparently loads of the like award bait films are flopping this year, like no one's going to see them. And like I saw a tweet that was basically like, maybe because releasing all the prestige films in like a 3-month window of the year is not the best way to market them.
Mm-hmm. Think about the new Knives Out as well. It's in the cinema for a week and then they're putting it straight on streamers.
Yeah, we're gonna get into it, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
We are gonna get into it.
Yeah, well, you have a theory.
I do have a theory, which we will also get to. We wanted to do a whole podcast episode that was just our theories, but they're all a bit disjointed, but...
Tinfoil hat episode.
Yeah. So tell us what Quentin Tarantino has been going on about this week, Eden.
What's he banging on about? So if you're on twitter.com, you will have probably seen this. Quentin Tarantino was on a podcast this week and said that Marvel actors aren't movie stars. He said, Captain America is the star, not Chris Evans. He then went on to say that he attributed the loss of movie stars to the marvelisation of Hollywood, and that you have all these actors that become famous playing characters, but they're not movie stars. So the person they're playing is already famous, so then they attach themselves to that and then they become famous. Mm-hmm. So he said that like franchise characters become the star. And he said that he doesn't hate Marvel, but he dislikes that Hollywood is only producing these films and that they're the only thing that really generate excitement anymore.
Also, something that I find really interesting, because I know we've like spoken about Marvel a lot and spoken about its impact on films and Hollywood, but like, I feel like even if you love Marvel, and I don't know loads of people that are like through and through Marvel stans apart from Halima, lol. I feel like even if you really, really like it, you kind of understand the level you're working with. But I feel like the biggest way to know that it has such a huge impact on Hollywood and how like the movie industry runs is A, all these directors always kicking off about it, but B, like the generation younger than like Tarantino, Scorsese, all of these people all do the films. So like, I remember when it was the Don't Worry Darling press run and Olivia Wilde was being like, oh, I've got a Marvel project, and was like really, really hyped about it. Which is like interesting because she obviously wants to be like a prestige director.
You can't be both. Taika Waititi as well, like, obviously did like this like amazing indie films, like What We Do in the Shadows is so good, and then he sold his soul to the Marvel machine.
But so obviously these Tarantino comments set Twitter alight, which to be honest I really enjoyed. Because the only thing on Twitter for the last few weeks has been about Twitter, and it's all fucking boring, and you can take your Twitter hot takes elsewhere, because I don't want to hear them anymore.
We don't care.
We literally don't care. Twitter is not for the girlies, I'm sorry.
No, it's so boring as well. Like, another day, another Elon Musk tweet. Cool.
Yeah, like, I literally just could not give a shit. Like, obviously I care about the workers, I care if he's treating them badly, blah, 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 blah. But I actually could not care if I woke up tomorrow morning and Twitter was gone from the world. I would be happy.
I think we'd all be happier.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so what's some of the backlash that Tarantino received for these comments?
Well, Simu Liu, who's in some Marvel film, The Legend of Ten Rings, defended these films by basically saying that these films highlight not necessarily unknown actors, but actors that are just starting out, and also a range of diverse talent. Mm-hmm. So he's saying that, like, I get where they're coming from, and they are filmmaking geniuses, like, but they don't get to point their nose up at anyone, because he's like, this has done so much for Hollywood, for inclusivity and for representation. And he said that no studio will ever be perfect, but I'm proud of the work I've done with Marvel, and I hope that I can like continue to empower people and represent diversity on screen. And said that I love the golden age of Hollywood, but it was too white.
Which
are all valid points.
But yeah, they are, of course. And like, obviously I can't speak to like racial diversity, but we have also gone into this in like the anti-intellectualism podcast, mm-hmm. about like Marvel, Disney, which is Marvel now, like Disney owns Marvel, kind of using diversity as a cynical, not even just a marketing technique, but a storytelling technique. And I saw some like tweets in response being like, right, so Marvel's this like really great diverse thing. Why was Black Panther the first diverse movie they ever made? And that was like not that long ago.
Yeah. Well, because they know that it's something that people like want to see. Obviously everyone wanted to see it before, but they know that it'll make headlines, and they know that it'll put bums on seats, and it's pandering.
I mean, Tarantino also knows that he's going to make headlines with his comments though as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think there's obviously a really interesting tension, because especially amongst these like older vanguard white male directors that have like predominantly told like white stories that center white men, because there is obviously somewhat of like a threat to their storytelling in a way, like maybe, or a perceived threat. Like, there's not actually a threat, because like a Tarantino film is still way more likely to get like way more money than like a female director's film, mm-hmm. unless it's in the Marvel universe. So I see lots of sides, but I think what is so interesting about it is just the fact that Hollywood is changing so much. Like, we've spoken about it with the franchise thing, and that's basically what Marvel is like, right? And also how it limits actors. So me and Eden were talking when we were hanging out about Elizabeth Olsen saying she basically just doesn't get to do loads of the shit she wants because she's always filming Marvel.
And Elizabeth Olsen, at the start of her career, was picking like really weird like indie films. What's that? Martha May, Mary, mm-hmm. shit. That's really good. So she's someone that clearly, you know, cares about the art of being an actor, And then it's like, well, why did you agree to do Marvel then?
Money.
Money, money, money.
Money.
Yeah, but like, you knew what you're getting yourself in for. You knew that, you know that you're now going to be tied to something for, it could be 2 films, 4 films, mm-hmm. 10 films, but they fucking have the multiverse of madness or whatever it's called. I don't know. like, you're not just going to be in that one film. You're now part of the franchise, and they could put you in every single film for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like you're contracted to just kind of serve what they want you to do.
Yeah. And I can't remember who said this in your research. It might have been a Scorsese interview, or it might have been Quentin Tarantino saying this. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's a good point. Like, there's so many films that we just go back to. Like, there's so many films mm-hmm. we'll rewatch over and over again. And also, that doesn't mean that they're like intellectually or aesthetically or an art house movie or whatever. Like, even really good Christmas films you watch again and again mm-hmm. and again, right? Because the storytelling is like fantastic, it's emotional. But I feel like I haven't ever done that with a Marvel film.
No.
B, they kind of program that out of the making of it. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, the fact that Spider-Man has been a different actor 3 times in the last 20 years. Like, why would you watch an old Spider-Man when they're rebooting it so often that you can just slide into your generation's one?
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, you don't have, it was Scorsese that said it, he wrote a piece for the New York Times after all the backlash when he said they hate Marvel. I love that they were like, right, Marty, you're going to have to write something.
You have to explain yourself.
Yeah, like, imagine him just like sat at his computer typing something out, like, to try and justify. Like, fucking Martin Scorsese, and you're forcing him to, or like, he feels like he has to say something. But he basically said, like, think about Hitchcock, that 60, 70 years later, we're still going back to those films and revisiting them. And he said that Marvel, there's no risk when it comes to like mystery or emotions or like revelations in their films, because they're made to satisfy a specific set of demands, and like they're audience tested and vetted and modified and like remodified until they're ready for consumption. So I guess it kind of, you don't really need to go back and revisit the old stories, because like you said, you can just watch your generation's version.
Yeah, and they're retold for you over and over and over again.
Yeah, like, whereas you watch, I don't know, Psycho, and you're like, this is an original story, not original mm-hmm. story, but like the film is worth going back to because it's not a remake of a remake of a remake.
Yeah. So this got his kind of like comments, and also I can't remember what, oh right, so this is where my theory comes in. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So there's Marvel, which is obviously like this huge conglomerate, and it kind of like has all of these actors on contract, but this is something that is more and more increasingly common, to kind of have this like Marvel structure, even if you're not creating superhero films. So for example, Ryan Murphy's production deal with Netflix, which was like the biggest production deal in television history, right? I can't remember how much it was, even though I have the research right here, but
it's 300 million.
300 million, which yeah, is bananas.
Yeah.
And like in the last, since the beginning of the pandemic, we've had Hollywood, we've had Ratchet, we've had Dharma, we've had Feud, we've had American Crime Story, we've had, I mean, what else? We've had Boys in the Band. Me and Eden were trying to list them before we started.
We've had maybe 2-3 seasons of American Horror Story. There's one we've had
now. So much, basically. And this is a model that is like increasingly common. So Gillian Anderson has just struck an exclusive deal with Netflix as well. Reese Witherspoon also has a production company, which I feel like she might have had a similar deal, but with HBO or something.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I think it's very interesting because I feel like we're going back to the old studio system where these kind of production deals are struck. But because of streaming, because of like the amount of content we are expecting and that we watch all the time, like Gina always makes the joke that I watch every single TV show, and it's literally mm-hmm. because I do, and I don't even take most of them in. I'm just like, yeah, it's good, yeah, it's bad, like that's like the extent yeah. of my feelings towards them. So I feel like we're gonna go back. So the reason why I started thinking this, sorry, was because I was watching The Crown, and when I was watching The Crown, the boss woman from Emily in Paris showed up, and then I was watching and then I was watching White Lotus, and one of the guys that works at the advertising agency and Emily in Paris shows up, and basically like all these kind of minor actors, like not big stars, but like mid-level actors that working TV or, and they're in series that aren't like, because we don't really have 24 episode seasons anymore, do we? So these actors aren't really tied down for that long. Like they do like 8-10 episode seasons and they're not playing major characters. So I think we're going to go back to the old studio system where there's like a pool of actors that serve each streaming service or each production house and they just rotate. Ryan Murphy has obviously been doing that forever already, but I feel like it's going to become way more official. Thoughts, Eden?
In the old days of Hollywood.
Exactly. So do you want to explain the old days of Hollywood for anyone that doesn't know?
I would love to. I am obsessed with old Hollywood. So when you said we're going to do about this, I was like, fucking jackpot, baby. Can't wait to do this research. So the old Hollywood studio system was a business model adopted by five Hollywood studios during the golden age of Hollywood from the 20s to the 60s, roughly. So there was Paramount, there was Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Warner Brothers, 20th Century Fox, and RKO. So when you basically started out in Hollywood, you would assign yourself, or you would get signed to a studio under contract, usually for 5 years. You could only do films with that studio.
And it kind of becomes this like fame machine, right? So they also like train them all. They like send them to acting classes. All the actors eat lunch together. It's basically like a 9-to-5 job where you go, you do all of these things, and then you all audition within the company kind of thing.
And everything was filmed like on location, usually on location on the studio lot. So yeah, like you said, 9-to-5, you'd clock in, all have your lunch together in the canteen, and then clock out at the end of the day. And then you would all be in the same place. Obviously, they would craft a star as well. So they would maybe have like a cool cowboy guy and then like a cold-hearted bitch and then like the lovable like rogue or whatever. So they would obviously, people would like have lessons, like you said, they would give you plastic surgery, they would like completely change your appearance, do loads of mad stuff because you kind of belong to them, and they wanted to finely tune your persona. Which obviously happens now, you know, people have agents, people have stylists, like, but I guess this was like...
I feel like that's kind of way more on an individual basis, right? So someone might walk in.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And they'll be like, okay, she wants to be an indie actress for the first 5 years, and then she can get this kind of film, and then she'll break into like award baits, and she should look like this. Like, there's that whole thing, right, that Emma Stone obviously was a natural blonde and she got no jobs, and then she dyed her hair ginger and she was like hired.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's an individual thing rather than like, and there's obviously influence from the studios, influence from other people, but it's kind of like more of an individualized decision rather than like a company saying, well, we need you to be this person.
Yeah, because you like to think people have more agency now rather than just, and I guess maybe stars were more like not binary, but like you had to be this or you had to be that. You couldn't really be multifaceted. But this is an interesting thing that I didn't know, that the studio system basically ended in 1948 because the Supreme Court, they basically decided to ban a procedure the studios did called block booking, where basically you would have this big star, so like you would have Cary Grant or like Judy Garland in a film, and that would be like the big project, and then you would have two films, you would like sell films to movie theaters in blocks. So you'd have the big picture, then you would have two kind of like lower tier things that were like a couple of stars in them, but not like a big budget thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you would have two like B movies that were really, really cheap to make, and you could just like make them in like 30 days or whatever. And you would sell that to a theater as like a chunk. And they basically got banned from doing that because they were like, you're kind of selling like lesser products, but trying to lump it all together. And that's kind of what sometimes happens like on these streaming sites.
Well, this is also so interesting because like I feel like this is basically in some ways what America as a whole is like, the entertainment industry as a whole is moving towards. So there's been a few like controversial mergers recently. So one, which like we haven't researched for, so we can't talk about in detail, was like Ticketmaster merged loads of like ticket sale websites, right? Mm-hmm. So they became the monopoly on who can buy tickets, mm-hmm. which has meant they have a monopoly over live music, which means that they're the only people that make money. And then the second example I can think of that I can't remember the exact details for, but it was in book publishing, and it was basically mm-hmm. like Penguin or something was trying to buy the second biggest publisher. So then they just become a monopoly.
Yeah.
In terms of entertainment, you can totally see Disney doing that because they bought mm-hmm. Marvel. They bought 20th Century Fox. They are Hulu. Like they have all of these things.
Yeah. That they well, we're going back to the five big boys in charge, and that's it. Like, mm-hmm. we've got like Netflix, Apple, Amazon, Disney.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
They're gobbling up all the competition. But that's exactly what happened back in the day, because these five studios didn't leave space for anyone else to be making productions, mm-hmm. or to be making films even. So, yeah.
And I think what was also interesting, though, is in that thing about like why it got banned, it was because a lot of the work that came out of, because we kind of think of the golden age of Hollywood like for a reason, that it produced like all these classic films, all these amazing mm-hmm. films, blah, 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 blah. But because of this block system, it produced a lot of mediocre work, right?
Yeah.
That is just literally like this content sludge that we've been talking about for the last few episodes.
Mm. Yeah. There's a lot of crap out there. Like, just turn on, I don't know, Film 4 in the middle of the day and you'll watch like a really like subpar Western. No one's going to do that.
I didn't even know Film 4 still existed.
But they always show old stuff during the day.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, some like, you know, I'm into it and I'm watching some stuff and I'm like, this is a load of rubbish.
Yeah.
Mm.
So my question to you is, like we've said about my theory of the stars will just sign up to like streamers or to specific production companies that have deals with streamers and like they'll only work within their thing. How do you think that affects celebrity culture?
Because they're tied, well, I don't know, I guess they might be more well-behaved or something, or because they're tied to a certain studio. They maybe not well-behaved, but if they're tied to a certain streaming service, they're going to have less artistic integrity.
Do you think it, like, limits them?
Yeah, of course it does.
As in terms of fame, though, because if they're, for example, like, if they're only in one place, like, one thing, it's like how often, for example, Netflix had that like one Scorsese film, or what I'm thinking about now is like Florence Pugh had, what the hell is that film called, Eden?
The Wonder.
Which I just watched this weekend, which is like, it's very like classic Florence Pugh fare. It's like a period drama. It has like a bit of spooky, like a bit of like a wronged woman vibe, all of these things. But I feel like it's definitely just going to go down into like the forgotten like book of memories because it is on Netflix.
But everything is like, because no one's a fucking movie star anymore. Like, think about even in like the 90s, you had people like Arnold Schwarzenegger and people that, and like Tom Cruise, like they are stars. Like, and if you just have someone working for like one specific streaming service, they are just going to like disappear into the ether because they're not going to pick stuff as well that's memorable. Or they will pick stuff that's memorable, but it's just limiting.
But also, I think that's an interesting point, because, like, for example, Tom Cruise, and just Tom Cruise actually, obviously had like a really has and had a really controversial personal life. And like in the noughties, he had like his marriage to Nicole Kidman, also his relationship with Katie Holmes. And I feel like we're kind of plugging that gossip gap with different celebrities now. Like we've got the Kardashians, we've got reality TV stars, but obviously bring Julia Fox into it, our absolute fave. Like, she's been like 70% of the entertainment stories this year, right? That like a lot of the girls have been interested in. Yeah. And that has like provided not just controversy, but also like good looks and like hot takes and all of these things. But she has said recently that even though like her popularity is at sky high, she can't get acting jobs.
Which is like, because she wasn't kind of an actor before this, like...
Yeah.
What does that mean then? Because people don't want to take her on because she's too controversial?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because she's good. I like her.
No, I think she's a good like actress as well.
She's amazing in Uncut Gems. What's that, Private Chat? She's good in that as well.
But there's also an element of this where it's like, so for example, actors and actresses, like actors can't really be controversial anymore, or like... not controversial, but have like wild private lives or like whatever, because there's so much to do with studio liability and insurance now, isn't there? Like, you have to be really, really like just down the line, run of the mill, not controversial in order to get your picture insured so it can get made, which I think was like a really big reason why a lot of people were being like, oh, Olivia Wilde won't work again because she'll be seen as like a risk or like a loose cannon or whatever to direct another film, which obviously in some, but it's also like, who do we make exceptions for? Because that should totally be the case for someone like Johnny Depp, but then because he's a man, or like even Quentin Tarantino has not treated women well, but like they still get to make films. It feels like the bar is very different for women, not that women should do any of those things that the former two men have done, but it feels like our kind of what we expect from a celebrity or from an actor and a movie star can't be fully realised because we don't really allow them to have personalities of their own anymore.
No. Because they're too... They're, because it's, like, trained out of them.
Yeah.
I really wish we could go back to, like, the old days, you know, where, like, Joan Crawford and Bette Davis are literally, like, scrapping each other and, you know, everyone was very poisonous towards each other. It was fun. Bring back messy drama.
Yeah, I agree. And like, plus I feel like everything in our kind of culture is just expects like really mega celebrities to not have personalities, lives or political opinions, unless they're like very middle of the road, like slightly liberal political opinions. Like there's the whole thing in journalism as well where you just can't really do a good celebrity interview anymore because you get like no time with the person and they're so heavily restricted, or like there's that new trend of like celebrities interviewing celebrities, or like who was the celebrity that interviewed themselves?
I don't know. I've just seen like Olivia Rodrigo interviewing Jenna Ortega, which I like that. Like, it's cute, but also they're not really going to dig deep because they know what they wouldn't want to be asked.
Well, it doesn't feel real either. Like, they're giving you a really, like, limited veneer of, like, authenticity because it's like, we're talking to a friend, but then it's very, like, they just end up being, like,
I like nothing. I fucking hate this thing as well where, like, like, everyone... Like, think about, like, the Ellen show that, like, pushed that, like, everyone's besties. Like, we all just hang out and we all just, like, love each other. Like, no! Fight each other. Like, you don't all like each other. We know you don't like each other.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why everyone loved it when Dakota Johnson was like, no, Ellen.
Yeah.
Because she's like, I'm not going to let you play these games with me, like, where you pretend that you're everyone's friend, but you're actually evil.
Mm-hmm. So, Eden, how do we solve it?
I don't know if we can solve it. I think it'll be interesting to see the impact that the return to the studio system has on actors that I already like.
Well, I think also because what kind of sparked us talking about this, apart from the Tarantino thing, was this article that came out on Cosmo, which is called like The Fame Machine is Officially Switching Gears. And it was like loads of different industry experts weighing in on where they think fame is going. And then someone said that there'd be like The fall of tokenism. One of our founding policies in 2015 was that we would not submit actors for casting calls until we assured the script was authentic representation of our community. Younger audiences now demand such representation, gender, sexuality, race and culture. Entertainment executives know this. They try to keep their finger on the pulse so their companies don't disappear. With so many high-skilled trans and non-binary actors coming onto the market, excellence is the future. I do not believe that for a second. I think if we go back to the studio system, there'll be more tokenism because specific actors will be associated with specific directors, production places, streamers, and maybe it'll bring back celebrity because it'll elevate certain people to like quite a high like household recognition. But I don't think it will create a more equal playing field. That's just my opinion.
No, because you've got your roster of like people that if you need like a person of colour, if you need a trans woman, if you need this person, they'll just find that person the role.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which then is just so transparent in itself because like you're not doing it because you want to make something good or you want to represent people. You're just doing it because as a studio, they're like, we need more representation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like equal opportunities hiring, but then you don't do any like work to ensure, and plus like the studio system was horrible, right? Like it was exploitative, like people were depressed, people were all of these other things, so it's not like thriving, it's not like a really like rich place for marginalized people to put themselves in.
No, it's not. I mean, yeah, they just totally owned you. Look at Judy.
And I also feel like that really rubs specifically our generation and Gen Z and younger people the wrong way. Like it feels like while Hollywood is moving towards a new structure, the rest of us are moving towards like new definitions of work and like less kind of prescribed modes of working, like working for a company, working in an office, whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So where do we go?
I don't know, hon.
Okay. End on a positive note. Like, it sounds like
You're a big movie fan, so how do we support the stuff we actually like?
Just let weird shit get made. Which I feel like does that. I feel like I'm like, whenever I talk about stuff like this, it's like I think that there's nothing out there. There is. There's so much good cinema. I think we're really in an age where there's more incredible stories are being told and more incredible films being made than ever. But
you just got to find them.
People need to get back to the cinema.
There's nothing on at the cinema.
Yes, and there's loads on at the cinema. But this is what's depressing about the new, Rian Johnson film, the Knives Out sequel, that is on Netflix. It's on in cinemas for a week and then it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
No one's going to go to the cinema to watch it if it's going to be on streaming. Like, I feel like we're so quick to put stuff on streaming. It needs to just let it just ferment a little in the culture.
And also how much he got paid for that, 100 million. And also, we said this, we were saying, or I don't know if we said this on the pod or just to each other, about Do Revenge. Like, that should have got a cinema release. It should have had girlies going to the cinema, wearing the outfits, like, exactly. Then going for dinner and having drinks afterwards.
Yeah. I think it gets rid of, like, the, like, water cooler conversation when stuff is just immediately... not immediately put on streaming because streaming's good and it's more accessible and obviously some people don't want to go to the cinema and people can't afford to but yeah, Do Revenge should have been in the cinema and I think that cinema gives things a bigger cultural moment and it's really depressing that cinema is dying.
Okay, well, on that note,
jaded old man.
Yeah.
These kids
old man shouts at the cloud.
Old man, I am old man Chelsea.
Well,
what do you think? Are you old man Chelsea Cloud? Or are you pro streaming?
I really like staying at home. I really do like staying at home.
You're like, I hated Suspiria when I saw it in the cinema because my bum hurt and I couldn't. Watch it.
I was like, but then I watched it at home and I loved it. The new Suspiria. I love staying at home. Sorry. But that's it for today. Thank you, Eden.
Thank you, Ione.
Thank you to all of you listeners. We'd love to hear what you think, so let us know in all the usual places. Instagram, comments, TikTok, email us. Do whatever you want. Thank you to Olivia for editing this episode. Thank you to Gina, Charlotte, Grace, Hattie, and Izzy. We will see you next week. Bye-bye!
Bye!
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit DiscoverSouthCarolina.com.